Mr. Meek?
Yes.
When you're ready.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Kevin Meek. I represent Parallel Networks in this appeal. The district court in this case said that its analysis began and ended with the releasing limitation of the claims, and so that's where I intend to focus my time. I'd like to address three main points: how the district court erred in applying the releasing limitation to the devices, if this error is corrected, how that infringement analysis should be done, and then finally, what is the substantial summary judgment evidence that supports a finding of infringement in this case, and by contrast, a reversal of the summary judgment of non-infringement. In applying the releasing limitation of the claims to the Oracle products, the district court erred by expressly limiting its analysis of the web server component to only a part of the web server, namely a particular instance or fiber within that web server.
The back-end fiber.
It actually, yes. It in that particular quote, it was analyzing the OHS system, and the district court said that freeing the OHS to process other requests would require the page server to free the OHS instance assigned to a particular request.
You talk about freeing other things.
Yes, Your Honor.
What are these other things that you're freeing?
Exactly, Your Honor. The focus of the district court is freeing this one instance or fiber, which is purely software.
What the court
the web server,
what's yours?
Yes, the web server writ large is actually the fiber within a program, within a machine. The web server was a construed term.
If you're talking about just one machine, as your patent talks about.
Yes.
There's a limited amount of capacity that can be freed up, right?
Yes, Your Honor. Okay, I understand where you're going. Yes, Your Honor, the specification talks about one embodiment where all of this architectural stuff can be on a single machine and in a single software module.
Right.
All right. That does not necessarily mean that within that architecture, things can't move from one portion of the software to another. And it also doesn't mean that that system, that computer system that is cited in the patent, cannot be a composite in and of itself. For example, well known in the art was multi-bladed machines, multi-processor machines. So as you move work from what is called the web server in the architecture to the page server in the architecture, resources are conserved even if it's in a single system. But once again, Your Honor, that is one embodiment that is described. There are other embodiments. Column 4 and column 5, for example, of the patent talk specifically about the hardware resources that are conserved when work is transferred from one machine to another. It would be a mistake to say that in order to release under the claims, one has to only release the software, because there are other embodiments where specifically the hardware resources are conserved. In contrast, the district court specifically said that its analysis was limited. In order to release, one had to release that little instance or fiber. The district court was wrong in doing this. The web server was construed by the district court. This is not a case of wrong claim construction. There is no claim construction to be corrected here. Web server was defined as a piece of software or a machine having software. And importantly, that's what ordinarily folks think about. If I pointed something, I said, there is a web server, the world knows that it could mean one of two things. It's either the box or it's the program running on the box. Nobody would ever think that it's 500 little fibers, 500 little web servers.
You know, the world probably doesn't.
Yes, Your Honor.
What I'm having difficulty with in this case is it seems to me that that's the essence of your argument here. I mean, that we're talking about the machine and not the software.
Yes.
But it seems to me that the analysis of the district court was really focused on it being the software, leading me to question whether or not how you made that argument to her. I mean, it seems, if I'm wrong, tell me. But did she address explicitly the argument you're making before us, the principal argument you're making before us, in terms of the machine? Because I don't see it.
Well, it's difficult to find.
There is a paragraph.
There is a paragraph, yes.
In which she addresses it.
Well, sort of. The crux of the problem is between pages A29 and A31 in the record.
Right.
This is where the district court introduces the idea that the instance or fiber is the sole functionality of the web server, and therefore its analysis is going to focus on it. The one
Let me stop you there to make sure I understand. Yes, she has two sections. One talks about releasing when the web cache is the web server.
Yes.
And the other is when OHS is the web server.
Yes.
Right. So that's what you're referring to.
I am. And let me point, I believe Judge Rader. Okay. At page A30 is the one and only spot that the court addresses hardware resources. But if you see at the bottom of
page... I had it on A29. Am I in the wrong place?
I'm
looking
referring
at page
to the,
22 of her
if you go
opinion
to the,
and hers, the middle, the paragraph there. Am I wrong?
That's another thing. If you take that, the payoff for that is on the next page where she says that the only way the TCP buffer memory can be affected by releasing at the bottom of the page, it does not allow an OHS instance to process other requests, the final line of that page.
I see that.
Okay, so the bottom line is that the district court is taking all of the evidence and is saying, unless you tell me that you release this fiber, you don't release. Okay? The problem with that is that that's inconsistent with the claim construction and the specification. The web server is not that fiber. The web server is much bigger than that.
But she's talking about the buffer memory being freed. And she's making the point that computer architecture places the buffer memory on a different layer from the web server functionality that serves these fibers. And so whether the fiber frees anything up or not is irrelevant because the buffer memory is someplace else. And so that it's, I think, doesn't she have a point?
You
can't be freeing it up if it's at a completely different place in the server and doing different functions.
Your Honor, I think the TCP buffer memory that she refers to is the portion that is dedicated to that fiber. That TCP buffer memory will not be deallocated, will not be freed until the request comes back. That's all true. The problem with this analysis is that that's not the sum total of the resources. She takes the only resource which is tied to the fiber and analyzes it, and instead she ignores the CPU, which is released, the other memory structures that are released.
But hold on a minute, counsel. Yeah. Judge Prost's question was, did you make that particular argument to Judge Robinson? And if so, where does Judge Robinson address that particular argument? I see on A29 through A31 that she talks about, for example, the top of A31, she says, thus one OHS instance receiving an ACK message cannot free another OHS instance to process other requests. That's true and rather self-evident if we're talking about those instances. Where is her discussion of the argument you're now making?
I think it is telling that it's missing.
It is telling that it's missing because it suggests, given Judge Robinson's thoroughness, it suggests that argument wasn't made.
No, the argument was made at the district court that, and substantial evidence was provided, that hardware resources of the web server are released. Dr. Finkel's testimony is uncontroverted that the processor, when this request is transferred to the page server, no longer has to worry about processing that request. Memory is deallocated upon receipt of an acknowledgement.
While you're doing this, can you point us, I mean, we know where Dr. Finkel's statement is, but where in the argument, can you point us to where
in our briefing?
Yes, or in the appendix.
Where you raised the processor resources argument.
Your Honor, I will find...
Before now.
yes, Your Honor. Obviously.
But beyond that, I mean, she does deal with some of the testimony by Dr. Finkel, and she dismisses it as being, you know, at least his declaration as being conclusory and nonspecific and so forth, which seems arguably to be a fair assessment of the testimony there.
Well, I think, though, that her analysis of Dr. Finkel, once again, I think that the district court's analysis of that is through this lens, that the testimony and the evidence does not support the releasing of a particular fiber. But Dr. Finkel has substantial testimony, and by the way...
But Dr. Finkel at no point analyzes Oracle software and points to any way in which something is freed up. He talks about, he reviews a lot of depositions from Oracle experts and executives, but where does he ever say, here's the software and here's how it works?
Well, Dr. Finkel referenced and reviewed over 69 Oracle technical documents, reviewed 14 deposition transcripts of 30B6 witnesses, and when review of the source code was necessary in the context of the dispatching limitation, Dr. Finkel did review source code. It is also telling that Oracle's expert agrees, Dr. Clark agrees, that Dr. Finkel's understanding
of
the...
Can you show me where he says the source code at this point of Oracle infringes?
The source code, no, Your Honor. I don't believe... Dr. Shaner...
Isn't that a failure of proof? Don't you have to prove to us with some evidence that at this point their web cache infringes?
I believe that has been done, but I cannot point you to source code. But I will say that Dr. Seamus, Oracle's expert, testified that review of source code in this context was not necessary because of the architectural nature of the invention. I would really like to reserve some of my time if there's...
that's just fine. Thank you, Mr. Meek. We'll preserve the rest of your time. Mr. Gilliland?
Good morning. May it please the Court, I'm James Gilliland here with Joseph Greco on behalf of the Apelli Oracle Corporation. It's important to recall that this is a discussion about infringement or non-infringement by Oracle software. And what is clear from the record is that Oracle software only works through the fibers or the instances that have been discussed so far this morning. This is a graphic from page 18 of Oracle's opposition brief. We have the web cache. The fibers are in green. They're there, the front end and the back end fiber. The court found that appropriately, it's now undisputed, that those fibers are created. They can only process one transaction at a time, and they are never released until the processing of that transaction is finished. Likewise, if the OHS is the web server under the second infringement paradigm, the instances are created. Those are in the red arrows on my chart. They are never released. They can only process one transaction at a time. And consequently, they are not ever freed up by offloading processing from a web server to a page server.
But am I misunderstanding? I understood the appellant's argument, at least on appeal, to be somewhat different than that. Right? I mean, I don't know how, maybe you can clarify it, but they're saying there's this computer out here, and based on the district court's definition of it being either software or a machine, there's this machine out there that is, in fact, does meet the limitation of releasing.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is that the way you understand their argument? And then, if that's correct, one, why is it wrong? And two, going back to the point we raised earlier, was this, in fact, raised before the district court judge?
I believe that Your Honor is exactly correct, that now on appeal, Parallel Networks is making a different argument than they made in the district court.
They're making a hardware argument, and you're addressing only software.
Their argument is that the web server machine, that microprocessor cycles...
Hardware,
exactly. Memory or microprocessor cycles are released.
The hardware can do something else after sending out the fiber. That's what they're saying.
Their argument now is that the hardware is freed, period. That's the end of the argument.
Irrespective of the fibers or the instances or whatever,
correct.
We're also looking separately at the hardware.
Yes, that is Parallel Network's argument now. But the reason that I started by saying, recall that this is a question about whether Oracle infringes or whether someone running a machine using Oracle software infringes, is because the only way the Oracle software works is through these fibers or through these instances.
You don't have any machines. You only have software.
Correct. So
would you be is their argument going to be that you are facilitating or inducing infringement with your software? Is
eventually,
that their point?
Yes. Eventually, Your Honor, yes. This has to be an inducing or contributory infringement case.
In which case, they'd have to prove some intent, would they?
They will have to prove that if they ever get that far. But our view is that they don't. Well, they will never get that far because even if you accept the notion that the claim means freeing of resources to process other requests, there's a clear failure of proof here that whatever microprocessor cycles or whatever TCP buffer memory is freed is ever used by the Oracle system to process other requests. As the court noted...
And that is part of the problem of apparently what was or was not argued at the trial level.
Well, at the trial level, everyone agreed with Judge Robinson that the claim construction of releasing the web server meant releasing the web server to process other requests. There was no...
Yeah, but apparently, I mean, I think the other side would say yes, but she, you don't disagree that she defined the web server as being the software or the machine, correct?
We do not dispute that. Therefore,
and that's what I think they're latching on to for purposes of their argument, right?
Although you might like to dispute it now, is that right?
No, no, we not dispute it now. We have other issues about contributory infringement or inducement.
Some about other issues. I'm puzzled about why did the trial judge... You raised three definitional defenses.
Yes.
And the trial judge picked one and stopped there. Was there something going on? I mean, why ordinarily a trial judge will say, and even if, and then go on and deal with the others, but she didn't. What, is something more to understand about this? Why did she just pick the one?
Your Honor, I do not know the answer to that question. There was nothing more going on, to the best of my knowledge. You're entirely correct that Judge Robinson is always very thorough. Apparently, she believed, and we think correctly, that this releasing limitation is so clearly not met that it was not necessary to address the questions about dispatcher or interceptor.
I can tell you what's troubling us here, and it's just simple common sense that the processor cycles are freed once it's sent forth its request via this back-end fiber. How do you get around that?
Well, two things. First of all, if the entire invention is implemented on a single a single computer program on a single processor, as is stated in the preferred embodiment, then there can't possibly be the freeing of resources. It's all running on one memory and one processor and just going from the left side to the right side. There's no evidence whatsoever in the record that any resources have been freed up whatsoever. Beyond that, in a partitioned architecture, if there are the freeing up of resources, say memory freed up or processing cycles freed up, there's no evidence to prove that those resources are used to process other requests.
But the claim construction is broad enough to cover multi-machine systems.
Yes, it is. But the claim construction also...
So you're
also
not really addressing my common sense problem here, that once you send it out, there's resources freed up.
I take it your argument is it's not enough to free them up. They have to be freed up for this particular purpose.
Precisely. That is what I was trying to say, and I apologize for being unclear. The claim does not say the web server, that resources are freed up on the web server. It says that the web server is released to process other requests, and therefore, to prove infringement, Parallel Networks was required to come in with some evidence that showed that whatever resources were freed up on your general basic understanding of how a computer works, resources are freed up. Were they used as required by the claims to process other requests? The only evidence in the record...
Other requests for web pages.
Other requests for
dynamic
web pages.
So it's a very specific, a dynamic web page. So it's a very specific freeing up. There is freeing up. Is that your argument?
It is my argument, Your Honor. Yes, Parallel Networks could have written the claim differently, or it could have even asked Judge Robinson to construe the claim to mean freeing of resources.
As long, though, as resources are available for use by other processors, it should meet the claim limitation. They should be freed up to process other requests.
So I disagree with that, Your Honor, because...
Well, help me out. I'm not understanding that.
So. Well, so in the record, there is the testimony from Dr. Clark. This is the only evidence in the record about what happens to the other resources. And his testimony, which is cited at page 54 of our brief, is that if there are any freed up resources, the computer system, the web server machine, can very easily allocate them to any other task that's running on the web server machine.
Including requests.
It might be a request, but it very well
so
might be.
So your point is that they just didn't prove that they were used for requests. But that's common sense, too. If it's a machine that is processing requests, when something's freed up, what's it going to do? Process another request.
Having
trouble. I mean, your common sense answer only raises another common sense question.
Well, so let's go back then to the way the Oracle software functions on this machine. It only works through the fibers or through the instances. Therefore, if there is processing power freed up, it will have to go to either making those instances run faster or those fibers run faster, because that's the only way that it can be help process other requests. It's as though we had to, now we all want to have energy efficient electric cars, right? Imagine if there were a patent on a method for having a energy efficient headlights to reduce the use of the battery in the electric car so that the taillights burn brighter. It's a functional limitation, it's the energy efficient so that the taillights burn brighter. Now to prove infringement, one would have to show that there is an energy efficient headlight being used, that power resources have been freed up, and that they are being used to make the taillights burn brighter. In order to do that, you'd have to prove A, that the taillights can burn brighter, and that they need those resources, or that the resources are not then sent to the radio or the electric windows or something.
But I think they've proven that this is a machine, and we're talking about hardware.
Yes.
You keep sending us to the software, but they're talking hardware, so we got to address that. The machine processes requests. That's all it does. And when that, it sends off its back-end fiber, it's clear from the record that there are now resources to do something else. What else is it going to do? Take another request. What am I missing?
Well,
and that meets the claim limitation. And then it may be that they can't prove inducement and intent and all the other things, but don't we have to send it back to Judge Robinson to deal with the hardware and to deal with the other claim limitations and the intent prong of inducement and everything else?
No, Your Honor, I think you do not, because in your question you sort of put the rabbit in the hat, if you will, because you said that the machine only processes requests. But there's no evidence that that's true. The web server, it maintains firewalls, it has network communications, it has the operating systems running. It could be doing many other things. Those resources that are freed up need to be freed up to process other requests for dynamic web pages, but the computer could be doing many
but
other things.
But as long as the resources are available for other uses, among which is the acceptance of requests, it should meet the claim limitation, right?
Well, so that is for you to decide. That is a key issue.
You'd like us to say the only thing that you can free that up to do is to take another request. That's the only thing it can do. But as long as it's freed up and takes requests, it seems to me it meets the limitations.
So what I'm arguing is that the limitation says it must be freed up to process other requests. And you, to simply read those words out of the claim would be inappropriate.
I'm not reading the words out of the claim.
Then,
it's freeing it up and it's right. Taking other requests.
Then it becomes Parallel Network's burden of proof on summary judgment to come forward with some evidence other than what we just think is might happen, is likely to happen.
So what is necessary? How do you fill that gap of coming forward some evidence? What is that some evidence consist of? Somebody who's used the system and processed another request at a particular time?
Thank you for asking that question. There are two simple things they could have done, and they did not do either. And we have to wonder why. The two simple things. First, look at the source code. Second, test the machine. If you're talking about the machine, then run a machine with the Oracle software on it and do an empirical test and see if the fibers work faster or if the instances work faster or if in some way that freeing up these processor cycles, which, by the way, there's also evidence in the record that what we're talking about is a de minimis amount of memory, a nominal number of processor cycles. Is there any evidence anywhere that those help process other requests, even if they are freed up? And the answer to your question, Your Honor, is test it. But they didn't. So all they have in this record, the only thing they have in this record, is completely bland marketing materials which say CPU resources are valuable. People compete, the processes, the many processes running on the web server compete for resources. Therefore, the jury from that alone, and Dr. Finkel saying
you show me where Judge Robinson's claim construction or other finding here requires the freed up resource to be only used to process other requests?
So that
as long as they're capable of use for other requests, is that sufficient? Does she make any finding on those?
The parties asked the court to construe the phrase releasing, the word releasing. Judge Robinson, in her claim construction order, which I believe is on page A4 of the appendix, said, that is problematic in this context. I want to construe the whole phrase releasing the web server to process other requests. And therefore, I'm construing this phrase to mean freeing the web server to process other requests. She did that on her own.
And capability and availability, therefore, ought to be sufficient, right?
Well, let me be sure, and I'm going to ask Mr. Meek this question, because I think we've now focused in on where I at least think the difference is. She said it means freeing the web server to process other requests.
Yes.
You're reading other requests as requests for a dynamic web page, whereas I think, if I understand Mr. Meek, he's reading process other requests as meaning requests for any other activity that this computer may be engaged in. Is that a fair differentiation between you?
I doubt it, Your Honor, but you'll have to ask Mr. Meek that question. But in the context
She never defined what she meant by when she said freeing the web server to process other requests. She never said whether her use of requests meant only the kinds of requests referenced in the patent or requests for other kinds of activities that the web server might be engaged in.
There was no discussion of that by anyone below because we all, I believe, knew we were talking about requests for dynamic web pages. That's what the entire invention is about. But the direct answer to your question is yes, Judge Robinson says nothing about that because we were talking about dynamic
web pages. It was understood?
Absolutely.
But if it's freed up, it could process other requests or it could do something else. It's freed up to process them if they come in, or it could do something else if necessary, right?
It is hypothetically conceivable that some of these processor resources might have been allocated toward
the
fibers.
So they're freed up to process them if they're there.
But to win summary judgment, you have to prove that something is more likely true than not true. And hypothetically, that it might happen is not sufficient to defeat the evidence in the record for summary judgment.
No, I don't think it's hypothetical.
I wanted to go back to where we kind of started, which was not a kind of issue of waiver, or sort of what argument was made to the district court. Was all of this part of the discussion? I mean, it seems to me, looking at her opinion, that it was really focused on the software part and not on this machine part. And so I guess, as we started with the other side, is this something that she dealt with explicitly? Were these arguments made to her?
Not nearly at this level of detail, Your Honor. There was, in both the briefs below and in the oral argument, there was reference to the fact that there were processor cycles that might be freed up, or memory that might be freed up, because of the TCP IP clearing of the buffer memory. And the court explicitly addresses that element of the machine, of the memory. That's the only machine or element, memory element, that was actually addressed by parallel networks.
She spends most of her time on the software, and that's because you're a software company. Did they accuse you of contributory infringement?
Yes.
That's part of what's at stake here.
If you look in Judge Robinson's decision, you'll see that she says this is a contributory case. First, I have to find out if there was any direct infringement. I conclude there's not sufficient evidence of direct infringement because there's no releasing of the web server. And therefore, she never addressed the remainder of the contributory or inducement arguments.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Meek, you have remaining
3 minutes and 27 seconds.
I don't know how much time you have remaining. You have 3 minutes, but if you need some extra time, you can take it, because we went over time with Mr. Gilliland too.
I do appreciate that. Thank you. I don't know whether I will or not. The first question, Judge Prost, these arguments were made at the district court level in two different summary judgment briefs. Those can be found at A1445 and at A21559-60. And these references address not just the buffer memory, but also the processor resources. I think that these things were fully briefed. I do not know why Judge Robinson focused on only the software and read to the limited extent she addressed hardware. She addressed it in the context of that one single threat.
Mr. Beek, I suspect you will address this, but let me intrude and be sure that you answer this one question for me.
Yes.
If I read you correctly, your understanding of the phrase, of her interpretation, freeing the web server to process other requests, I believe you're reading other requests to include activities beyond simply dynamic web pages.
No, Your Honor.
That's not so.
Mr. Gilliland was correct. The focus has been on the processing of other requests for dynamic web pages. What Judge Rader discussed is, however, true. As long as the processing resources, memory resources, etc., are freed, it does not matter what they do with their time after that. They have already met the claim limitation. So, for example, if I freed processing resources and they are waiting for work to do, if they do another request, they are obviously available. If they do some other thing, they prevent a hacker from breaking in or something, they are still freed and they still meet the claim. The claim does not require that they go on and do the work. The claim requires that they are free to do the work.
And where's the testimony that that's what happens? The other side referred to the
Thank
fact
you.
That there was no testing, etc.
Exactly.
Where is the evidence?
Yes, I have several, and this is all in our reply brief, but Dr. Finkel testified specifically that the Oracle systems, both processor and memory sources, are freed at the web server for use in processing requests. That's at A13516, A13519. That alone is sufficient, but Oracle's own experts and documents establish that fibers or instances compete for a finite set of processor resources. That's Dr. Clark at A15372. They agreed that absent the acknowledgement message, the web server will continue to resend. That's the processor churning. It'll continue to resend and eventually have to create an error message. Those resources are kept in play until that acknowledgement message. That's at A15370-72 and A15387-8. When the acknowledgement is received, the buffer memory is deallocated and the time scheduler no longer has to worry about that job. That's at A15317. This is Oracle's own experts talking about this. The documents from Oracle that Dr. Finkel reviewed, and these are in page 12 and 13 of our reply brief,
go through in detail how hundreds of requests are being processed at the same time, and the limits on how much this work can be done is memory and processors. They say if you want to have this thing have more capability, add hardware. The web server in this case is a hardware-software composite animal. The construction that was given by the court was that it was both. It was a machine and it was a software. Our systems release, the interpretation of the claim should be that the releasing could release both hardware and software elements. That's all that's required.
Intercepting limitation. Don't the web cache and the OHS process some parts of the request before sending it on? Therefore, you can't meet the intercepting limitation.
I think that is a... intercepting is deciding whether or not the web server is going to process the request.
But they do process the requests, and therefore, to some degree, and therefore you can't meet this, they don't meet the intercepting limitation.
Yeah, I think that's a very limiting reading of the intercepting limitation. I think the intercepting limitation means who is going to finish the job, rather than, I mean, the bulk of looking at the amount of information that you need to decide whether to do it or pass it on is frankly trivial compared to actually constructing the page and the dynamicism that entails. So I think the idea that intercepting it requires no processing at all would be technically not feasible. You have to at least acknowledge that there is something in the buffer. You have to store it, for example.
But
would that be processing?
Diverting the handling of said request before the request is processed by the server.
Yes.
That's the claim construction.
That's right.
Before it's processed, they process it.
Right.
So they don't intercept it, according to the way it's defined.
No,
And you didn't argue that claim construction, right?
The claim constructions are not on appeal. I would say that before the processing means before the processing, which is the creation of the dynamic web page, which is, in other words, before the processing,
is complete, is what you say.
Yes. I mean, it, that's the ultimate result of that.
But the claim construction said is before the request is processed, and they process it.
Yeah, but if you take that reading, it collapses on itself, right? Because how do you divert something without at least looking at it? How do you do anything in a computer without at least
your interpretation collapses worse. If the processing is complete, why do you send it off?
No. The processing,
you're saying it's got to be complete. If they completed it, there'd be no reason to send it.
I misspoke if I said that. What my point
maybe
is...
Maybe I misunderstood. So.
Yeah, well, my point is that some minimal, call it triage, has to happen on the request to decide whether it will be processed locally or processed in the page server. I don't believe that triage is processing the request under the meaning of this patent. Processing the request under the meaning of this patent is creating a web page that is responsive to that request. Where is that work going to be done?
All right. Thank you. Just wait a second. Anything else?
Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Nothing more.
Thank you, Mr. Meek.
Thank you very much.